It is my other world, and the guest today is an old friend of mine, someone you know if you live in Chicago. His name is Andy Avalos. He's been on television presenting the weather to all of us for how many years?
More than 30. Actually, I started in April of 1984, so if I do the math, that's 32 years.
Amazing. That's incredible for a guy who's only 33 years old.
So, that's right. You saw me when I was in diapers.
Well, and it's so you walk in the Tribune, and people recognize you all the time. And they recognize you and they see a smile on their face, I'm sure, because Andy, you are one of those personalities. You've become a part of Chicago.
You're too kind.
No, you really have. And there's always a smile on your face, it seems. You're also so smooth on the air.
Unless I'm at
home. Do you ever goof up?
Yes, I do.
I don't believe you.
It's so funny that you mentioned that now, because one of the things I used to do in the past, I always prided myself on being flawless. It was my goal in every single segment to not have any mistakes, any errors. And people used to comment all the time, like you just did, you never make a mistake. You're flawless. And I've noticed now that I've gotten considerably older that it's much harder. And the fact that I'm on the shift that I'm on and I get very little sleep, that I make more mistakes now than ever before. So as hard as I try, reality is setting in. But thank you.
No, I don't believe it. So what time do you start in the morning?
I get up at midnight.
Wow.
Yeah. And, you know, I stop at Dunkin' Donuts to get my coffee. Can we have a commercial plug in this? It's okay.
It's okay.
Every night, roughly around 12:55 to 1 a.m., and then I live out of the suburbs, so it takes me close to an hour to get into the city. So I need that coffee to get me here. And I roughly get to the station every morning somewhere between 1:45 and 1:50, like clockwork. It's amazing how that works.
And what time do you go on the air now? I think the news starts at like 2 in the morning now.
Yeah, it seems like
it's getting
earlier
there.
And earlier and earlier. Pretty soon, Brant will just hand me the baton, and I'll just walk in and
yeah,
he walks
really?
Out.
The 10 o'clock news stops,
that's right.
And the morning news begins.
So the first broadcast starts actually at 4 a.m., but I got a couple hours worth of work to do before I hit the air. So there's a lot of work to do, including the forecast. And
so what do you do? So what does a weather guy do before he or she goes on the air? You look out the window?
Yeah, well, I've been driving in for about an hour, so I already have a pretty good idea of what's going on, not only out of the burbs, but into the city. But yeah, first thing I do is I brief the newsroom, because obviously the production crew has been there all night. They usually get in around 10 at night or midnight to produce the morning shows. So I'll give them a briefing so that they know what the general consensus for the day is going to be, at least in terms of the weather, whether it's a big issue, we need to lead the shows with it, whether it's going to be a beautiful day, a stormy day, whatever the specifics are. I tell them every morning. So it usually takes about 5 minutes. We discuss the big stories of the day. Then I go back to the Weather Center. The first thing I do is to make sure all the computers are working. No fires to put out.
Yeah.
There's nothing worse than having a computer issue or issues to have to deal with before I can ever start doing my regular thing, because that really, really puts me behind the eight ball when that happens. And it does.
Hmm. Yeah, I hadn't thought about that. So you have IT people in the middle of the night coming?
Well, yes, we always have an engineer and an IT person standing by. But, NBC is a big place. There are a lot of different things going on. So he or she might be tied up on some other project. And when I call, they'll get to me as quickly as they can, but it might not be as fast as I'd like them to get there.
Yeah.
But as a rule of thumb, they're really pretty good about it.
And how do you put the weather together? I mean, some of it is computer generated now, I assume.
Oh, yeah. A lot of the stuff that we get now, virtually everything. It's not like the old days when we had facsimile machines. Yeah, I'm that old.
The ticker tape?
Yeah, that's right. You remember the old wet paper? And
actually, I don't want to say I do. However, the yellow paper that came out of those giant machines.
That's right.
That really went tick, 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 tick.
And on the air the other day, the anchor that I'm doing the morning show with now, his name is Alex, and he's a relative newcomer to NBC and Chicago. And we had a story about teletype, and I looked at him and said, do you even know what that is?
I'm sure he did not.
He
no.
did not. But,
no.
But in any case, I digress. So, there's a couple of hours worth of work to do, and everything is computer generated. I mean, I go online, we use a company, and most broadcast meteorologists do. We pay a company. In our case, we use WSI, Weather Service International, and we get satellites, radars, alphanumeric data. We go online to various sites. We all have our little favorites that we use, NCEP, National Center for Environmental Prediction, that type of thing, NOAA,
mm-hmm.
and download the forecast models.
Now, there's a couple different big models, and when those models conflict with one another, mm-hmm. does your experience in Chicago play a role? I mean, mean, I've been here. I know what happens. Here's the lake effect. Yeah. I don't care what they say.
Yeah.
Does sometimes your own opinion override some of that?
Absolutely. I think that that's probably a very true statement. There are times when one particular model tends to have a better performance given a specific situation. And we'll use your example, lake effect snow, for a particular example. That, you know, let's say the NGM, for example, the nested grid model will say, okay, here's what's going to happen. This is the lake effect plume. This is how far it's going to extend inland. This is how long it's going to last. Shows the wind trajectory. And that particular model may handle lake effect snow better than any of the other models, so you tend to side with that one. But as a rule of thumb, there's a pretty good general consensus among the models, so we'll use the mean sometimes. The problem with today's technology, there's so many models that you can't look at all of them. You just can't. And so, you know, we get plumes that we can look at, which basically comprise a multitude of models, and you can see them all displayed in one graph.
Hmm.
And so that makes it a little bit easier. When you see an outlier, you may look at that one closely and say, okay, what does this one see that the others aren't? And then you'll either say, okay, this is onto something, or you'll blow it off and say, no, that's out in left field. And then you'll go with the one model that you think is the one closest to the situation and the way you think it's going to work out. And when you get two or three that are very closely aligned, that's when you know you're really onto something. When the general consensus is spot on,
mm-hmm.
three or four models in a row, then you know you're really on the right track.
So has this ever happened where you turn on channel 2 and channel 7 mm-hmm. and channel 9, you know, the other ones.
Yeah, the other guys.
And the other guys all say whatever they say.
Mm-hmm.
And Andy Avalos says, no, this is going to happen. Has that ever occurred?
Well, the answer to that is I don't know, because if they're on the air at the same time I am, I don't get to see them.
Oh, that's a cop-out answer. Let me rephrase the question then. So, those models.
Yes.
Have they ever said one thing mm-hmm. and you've ever said, no, they're wrong?
Yes, that has happened on occasion. When you're on the air for as long as, say, a Tom Skilling or even a Jerry Taft, for that matter.
Or Andy Avalos.
Or myself. You know,
or Brent Miller.
Or Brent, absolutely.
Yeah, yeah.
You obviously get a working knowledge of things on the local scale that the models may not pick up on. And there are times when you literally will discount them and say, I know that this is what's going to happen because this has happened, you know, 100 times before. When you've been here for 30 years, you've seen it 100 times before. So, yes, there are times you can discount the models and pretty much go on your gut instinct. And it's happened before.
Have you ever been wrong?
I'm sorry, what?
I didn't ask that. Did I ask that question?
I can tell you this, absolutely positively, I have been mistaken, but I have never been wrong. But the models have been.
It's a great way to answer that question. So you go into the grocery store, and you predicted a beautiful sunny day.
You go into the grocery store? You're Andy Avalos.
I do go into
the grocery store.
But do you get people that seriously get mad at you because the weather isn't what you said it was going to be? Or even if you did say, mm-hmm. it's raining 3 days in a row, have you ever gotten people that are, I'm talking seriously angry at you?
Yeah, the answer to the questions are yes and yes. people do confront you. They either want to say hi, just acknowledge the fact that they know who you are.
Well, that's nice.
Which is always very nice. And whether the comments are good or bad, the fact that they stop me at all and at least know who I am is always a compliment and a feather in my hat. I always stop and acknowledge the person, because if you take the time to come up to me and say hi and acknowledge me, then I was going to say damn, darn well.
It's a podcast, so you almost can say what you want.
That's right.
Almost.
Then it's incumbent upon me to stop and say hi and be appreciative and thankful for the fact that they took a moment to come up and say hi.
And knowing you, I can verify that you're just a nice guy, you know, and you do that. So did you, in third grade, wake up one day and say, that's a cumulus cloud, I want to know more about that?
No.
How did this come about? Why weather?
This is one of those careers that more or less found me than I found it. When I was in school, you know, my first love was broadcasting. You know, and even when I was in high school.
Do you consider yourself a broadcaster first?
Absolutely. Sure.
Yeah. You know,
that's how I started. My first job, it wasn't a job, I suppose, but I was enlisted by my high school to do the high school sock hops. And for those over 40 or 50, you know what that is. For those listening under 20, you have no idea what that is.
So you were Dick Biondi.
I basically was Dick Biondi, yes, from my high school. So we'd have two or three dances per year, and I would actually bring all of my record collection and I would bring my record player from home, and I would play songs for the local dance at the
school. Like what? Do you remember any?
Oh, sure. You know, again, I used to play, again, the old stuff. We're going back to the 50s and 60s because I was in high school
yeah.
in the 60s and early 70s. But in any case, you mean the songs specifically?
Yeah.
Well,
like the
disco
chubby checker
wasn't the
thing?
Big thing yet. Well, you know, sure. You know, that's At the Hop and songs like that, you know, and... geez, now you're really dating me.
Rock Around the Clock.
Bill Haley
things.
In the comments. Yeah, Rock Around the Clock. But whatever you could jitterbug to.
Oh, yeah. Do what?
Jitterbug.
Okay.
You know, dance.
So is that legal?
Yes, it is.
And were you on the radio at some point, playing music even?
Yeah, you know, after I graduated from high school, instead of going to college right away, I ended up going into the Army. And that's where I found my interest in meteorology.
Ah.
And that's where it started. But my first love is always broadcasting. And so then even after I got out of the service, I wanted to pursue broadcasting. And so that's what I did. And the short story is I ended up, after a period of time, pursuing my very first job in radio. And I started at a little country and western station in Pueblo, Colorado. And at that time, it was an AM and an FM station, and it was called KPUB AM and FM, the Country Twins. And it was my very first introduction in my job on the air. And I had my handle was AJ, the DJ, and I even had a country twang that I had made up for the show.
How did that sound?
I don't even think I can do it anymore.
Give it a go.
No.
Come on,
y'all. It was so long ago. Yeah, it was so long ago. I don't even know if I could muster that up and even try. Hey, this is AJ, the DJ, and you're listening to the Country Twins.
I love
something
it.
Something along those
I
lines.
I love that.
This is Merle Haggard and Tammy Wynette.
Did you fool anyone?
No. But
so,
I tried.
So you weren't in Pueblo long?
Longer than I wanted to be.
I've heard that about that city, actually.
Very appreciative for that first opportunity. I was
sure.
actually at that radio station for a couple of years. And when they first hired me, I was basically learning how to operate the board because I had never done this before. It really was my first job in broadcasting. And when I started, they didn't even have an on-air position for me. They said, well, the only opening we have, and we don't have enough time to go to the entire story about how I got this opportunity, but they said, we have a janitorial position open. And if you'd like to take that position, and then come in and monitor the guys on the air and watch what they do, they'll break you in and show you how to do this. So I said, absolutely. So I took the job, and I actually started there as a janitor.
Wow.
And then over time, and this took several months, I would go in every day, do my janitorial duties, and I'd sit in the studio, and I'd watch what they do and how they did it. I'd take notes, copious notes, and then I'd go home and practice. And then after probably the first couple of months, they allowed me to sit on the board for the weekends for remote broadcasts. And at that time, I could say, this is KPUB, AM and FM, Pueblo, Colorado. It's 1 o'clock. That was all I could say. And then we'd roll into the news. And the person who was doing the remote broadcast did everything else. And I ran the board, played the commercials, played whatever songs we had. And after a couple of months of that, then they finally said, okay, you can have a weekend show. And so I did Saturday from 6 a.m. till noon and Sunday from 6 a.m. to noon. And that six-hour block on Sunday, well, the six-hour block on Saturday was always a live remote broadcast. And I never said anything other than the call letters at the top of the hour. And I did get to read the news and weather. And then everything else in the context of the show was done by the person on the broadcast and live wherever it was. And then on Sunday, it was the religious hours from 6 to noon. So children's Bible hour and every other thing. So again, all I ever said was, this is KPUB, AM and FM, Pueblo, Colorado.
Yeah, been,
it's 1 o'clock.
I've been there.
Yeah. Only after a few months did I finally get an actual radio show. And that's when I started the whole AJ, the DJ thing and the country twang.
So how did that somehow move over to doing the weather?
Well, I had stayed there for a couple of years. And since I had actually lived and grown up in Pueblo for years, it wasn't I just was passing through on the way and got that job. I had listened to a local radio station, which was the Rocker, and it was called KDZA, the Rock of the Rockies. And I grew up listening to that station for years and always thought to myself, someday I'm going to work there. So I admired the guys that were on the air, had listened to them for years. And, you know, they would have been like the Larry Lujacks, you know, and the Fred Winstons of Chicago.
Of Pueblo, Colorado.
Yeah, only of Pueblo.
Yes.
So,
you know, Fred will probably listen to this, actually.
Oh, no.
Yeah,
hi,
true.
Fred.
Yeah,
long
true.
Time. No,
true.
See, buddy.
He's the best. The best.
Yeah.
Should be in the Museum of Broadcasting, really.
Yeah.
He should
well,
be.
You know, fast forward.
Did you ever work
later,
with him?
Yes. I was just about to say,
You've heard the body sounds that came out of his out of one human being.
Which orifice are you talking about?
Yeah, exactly. You know Fred.
So in any case, I was about to make the point that I idolized these guys and thought, wow, here I was at this little country western station, and I didn't think they had any idea who I was. And I bumped into them on a remote broadcast somewhere, and they said, Andy, hi, how are you? And I said, you know who I am? He said, oh, sure. We've been listening to you for a couple months now. Long story short, I applied for a job there. Of course, they didn't offer it to me. They said, thanks, but no thanks. And I ended up staying at that country western station for 2 years. And remember, I started as a janitor. And when I left a couple of years later, I was actually the program director and did morning drive.
Wow.
And at that time, KDZA then came a calling and said, would you like to come work for us? And I said, yes, I took the job. And while I was there at the Top 40 station, which, of course, now I was really right at home. I got rid of the twang. I was no longer AJ the DJ.
What were you, who are you now?
I was just Andy Avalos.
Oh, that.
Yeah,
okay.
Him. And it was more my element. And I was really comfortable there, and I loved it. And as it turns out, the local TV station, which was KOAA, the NBC affiliate, one of the guys that worked at the station to augment or supplement his income, his name is Bob Allen. He was the weatherman, and he worked at KDZ as well. Well, the two of us became friends, and then we also worked at the local discotheque together because by now it's the 70s and disco is the cool thing.
Uh-huh.
So I was working at the discotheque as well. So Bob and I became really good friends, and I became good friends with these people I idolized over at the station, KDZA. And then I started working with them, and so Bob was the weatherman at the NBC station. They were starting a new afternoon variety show, and it was called Super Show. And this would have been 1978 or 79, something like that. And Bob said, you should come and audition for the show. And I said, I have no experience in television. I wouldn't have the slightest idea what to do. They said, no, I think you'd be pretty good at it. You should. And I didn't. A couple of weeks went by, and he said, no, really, we're holding auditions. You should go. So I did. I ended up driving to the station, which was actually physically located in Pueblo, Colorado. And when I pulled up, I remember there were dozens and dozens of handsome and beautiful people in line.
Handsome and beautiful people.
Yeah, they were all, they had to be at least 30 or 40 people. I'm not kidding.
Huh.
And I looked at all of them and I thought, wow, there's no way I'm going to get a job here with all of these people applying. So I left.
Really? Mm-hmm. Because you are not handsome and beautiful?
Well, I just didn't think that I was going to be able to compete. So I left. And probably about a week went by when I saw Bob again, and he said, I'm really disappointed in you. And I said, why? And he said, you didn't show up for the audition. And I said, I did go, but I saw the people there, and I thought, there's just no way I'm going to get hired over all those people. So I said, okay, fine. So a couple of weeks went by. I didn't give it another thought. Turns out that while I was over at KPUB, that little country western station, uh-huh, every Monday we had a talk show called The Monday Forum, and I was the host of that show, and we would tape the show. And one of my guests just happened to be John Gilbert, who was the general manager of the NBC station.
Aha. Uh-huh.
So we had that 1 hour encounter. It was the only time I'd ever seen or spoken with him. And off he went, and all this time had passed. So as it turns out, Bob and John were having a meeting, and they were putting together the staff for this afternoon variety show called Super Show. And he said, you know, I auditioned all the people. I've got a handful that I like, but nobody that really, you know, hit it out of the park for me. And then Bob said, well, you know, I've got a friend, and I'd like for him to audition for the job. But he didn't want to. And he said, I'll see if I can encourage him. And then John said, well, you know, actually, I've got somebody in mind that I'd like to call in as well. Turns out they were both talking about me.
Nice. Nice.
So I came in and I auditioned.
And you
I
hit
got
out of the park.
Job.
Yes. All right. Otherwise, you wouldn't be here now.
And so anyway, this was an afternoon variety show. And we were on the air from 3 to 5, Monday through Friday. And we used to play all the old serial shows like The Lone Ranger, Poncho and Cisco, Lassie, things like that. So from 3 to 5, we'd have these half-hour serials, and then we'd do little segments in between, Bob and I. And he was the producer, I was the co-producer, not that I really knew what I was doing, but he was showing me the ropes. And over time, Bob got really enthralled with the shows and would sit down and watch them, and he started doing less, and I started doing more. So after a few months, I learned how to put the structure of the shows together and basically became the producer as well. And along the way, Bob would say, you know what, let me show you a couple of things that I'm doing, because he was still doing the weather at the time. And I said, well, what? And he said, well, this is going to be for the news, and you can help me out do the weather. So one thing led to another, and he showed me more and showed me more and showed me more. And I learned the basics pretty quickly. And in a very short period of time, Bob had a vacation coming up. The weekend person that was doing the shows at that time filled in while he was away. And the week he was gone, I was doing Super Show on my own. So I remember the news director coming in to me saying, Hazel's not feeling well. It's going to be in late today. Can you get the weather elements together for the show? And I said, yeah, sure, I can do that. So back then, we didn't have computers. We had the facsimile machines and the teletype. And no computers. And everything was drawn on the boards, you know, those magic markers. Yes,
you actually drew those things?
Yes, you drew the cold fronts and the clouds and the temperatures. It was all done by hand.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so anyway, I got everything done, and it was about 4:15, 4:30 in the afternoon, and the news director came to me and said, is the weather all ready to go for the 5 o'clock show? And I said, good to go. And he said, okay, great. He said, you have any problems? And I said, with what? And he said, the weather. I said, no, I just said I had everything done. It's ready to go. He said, no, I mean actually doing the weather. And I said, I don't understand. What do you mean doing the weather? He said, I want you to do the weather. I said, I did it. He said, no, on the air, stupid. I said, what do you mean on the air? He said, in the newscast, you get to be Bob. I said, I can't be Bob. I don't know anything about the weather. And he said, you know as much as Bob, right? I said, yes. So I said, look, I can fake this. And so I did, because Hazel was sick and didn't come in. So I had to do the news for the 5 and 10 o'clock.
And I bet it went okay.
It went okay. So long story short, after some time had passed, Super Show got canceled.
Oh.
Hazel moved on. They needed somebody for weekends. They asked if I'd be interested. I had my full-time job over at KDZA at that time, but wanted to supplement my income in addition to the disco.
Sure.
So I took the job. And I was doing weekend weather at, we only had the 10 o'clock show then on Saturday and Sunday. And I was getting $10 a show.
But thrilled,
but
probably.
But thrilled to be doing it.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's really how I started initially.
Yeah. You know,
and then eventually we had a 5 and a 10.
What is it about doing the weather that, and I can tell in the air, it still excites you.
Oh, sure.
What is it?
I always tell people that I don't really forecast the weather, but I predict the future.
Okay.
Because that's really what we're doing.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, if you're a...
When you got it right.
When,
yeah.
What do you mean when?
No. Every day you do it.
That's right. You know, it's one thing. You can't sit here and say that tomorrow there's going to be a plane crash, there's going to be explosion, there's going to be a fire, there's going to be a shooting somewhere. With any certainty, you can say that that might happen. But the fact that we can go on the air with a great deal of consistency and say, tomorrow this will happen, and the day after this will happen, and a week from now there's a pretty good chance this will happen, and then it comes to pass, I mean, that's pretty amazing. I mean, really it is. And what are we doing? Yes, we're forecasting the weather, but we're predicting the future.
And how much are we at it, better at it today than we were, say, when you began?
Oh, considerably better. Just 100 times better. And with the technology that's available and the new satellites and the computer guidance models, just the sheer knowledge that's available today, the power of the computers, the technology will only get better and better and better. And I would say that sometime within the next 10 or 15 years, forecast accuracy within a 12-hour window will be up around 90 to 100%.
Are we actually going to, at some point, be able to stop hurricanes, stop tornadoes?
Not in my lifetime.
Really?
No.
People have talked about that, as you
know.
Well,
you know, they're always experimenting. They're doing things to see what they can do to influence the weather. And by they, I mean, you know, the government and
But would
know,
that
scientists.
Be a good thing? Because sometimes when you think you're doing a good thing.
Just because you can doesn't mean you shouldn't.
Right.
Or you should.
Yeah, I know what you mean. There can be unintended consequences.
So at some point, will we have influence and control over the weather? The answer is yes. You know, there are many who would argue that we already have influence and control over the weather when you get into climate change and global warming. But there's just as many that say, no, not yet. You know, it's not the consensus that you hear oftentimes that it is. It isn't 100% ironclad. Yes, we're responsible. We're doing it. Many believe that we are, but just as many, I would say, do not. But the bottom line is whenever I have this discussion with anyone, we only have one planet. We only have one Earth, and it's our responsibility to take care of it and do as much as we can to protect our environment.
Are we screwing up?
Well, there's no question that we have been spewing a lot into the atmosphere for decades. But when you consider that the Earth is 4.5 billion years old and that our time on the face of the planet is nothing more than a second.
Yeah.
Because if you think of the existence of the Earth in terms of a 24-hour clock and the time that man has actually walked the face of the Earth, and then when you fine-tune that down to the industrialized age, when we started producing all of these pollutants that were spewing into the atmosphere by the tons and have for years, our measurement of the face on the face of the Earth is equivalent to 1 second.
Yeah, yeah. So, but look at the impact we had in that 1 second, and that's kind of scary.
Well, but do we know that that's us?
I don't know.
And if we're talking specifically about climate change, there are those who will say absolutely positively it's anthropogenic, it's man-made, it's man-induced.
Mm-hmm.
And there are those who say it's not. I think that the consensus would be we need to continue to pursue this. Yes, we find new modes of energy, be it nuclear, be it solar, be it wind. But I would argue today and will be going forward for the next 20 or 30 years, fossil fuels, coal, and oil. Because what else do we have to take its place that would be able to fuel jets that fly around the world?
I know the answer.
What?
Hook up a dog tail that wags back and forth and back and forth and back and forth, which is an effort to make a transition.
Yes, and a nice
pretty,
one at that.
Well, pretty so, lame one at that.
That's okay, but let's move on to talking about pets.
Yeah, so I want to talk about your first love in the world. Mm-hmm. As much as you love doing the weather.
And I do.
And it's an interesting conversation to have because I don't think... I mean, we've got amazing meteorologists in Chicago, mm-hmm. but I don't think we pull the curtain up often enough to understand why you do what you do. So thank you for that conversation. But I know you, and this is your passion. It's saving animals. And it's been for a very long time.
Well, I do a segment every weekend, and they are on Saturday and Sunday. And if you're a longtime follower of mine and or NBC, you know that we have segments called Adopt a Pet. And they're now called Clear the Shelters.
Mm-hmm.
And we started this new campaign and program a year ago on a national level through NBC. And so we didn't just do it locally here in Chicago, but we did it across the country. At all
yeah,
NBC
I was O&Os. I was part of that, actually, yep. Because one of the sponsors had me do something.
So the idea was that the corporation would put a lot more muscle behind finding homes for animals in need as opposed to just one station in a given market. And so last year was a huge success, so successful that they decided to rename or rebrand all of the other segments across the country that were being done.
Mm-hmm.
Clear the Shelters now. And so every Saturday and every Sunday, we have a segment in the 6 a.m. news about that very thing. We adopt, find pets that need adoption.
Do you, now, you've been doing this for about how many years?
Well, I started 10 years for sure, and it could even be 12. I've just forgotten because so many years have come and gone.
Do you have any idea how many dogs and cats you've adopted out? Hundreds, well, for sure.
Yeah, well, for sure, hundreds. Because usually we'll do one dog and one cat on a Saturday and one dog and one cat on a
but
Sunday.
But you cheat
so that's
every
four.
Now and again.
But every now and then, you know, we'll get a passel of pets. Like yesterday, for example, we shot one segment with 6 new puppies. And then we've done a series prior to that, and I can't remember now. It was more than a dozen puppies. So in one given weekend, and they all get homes. They all get homes.
So have you ever... So on the radio, we do this adopt segment with Steve Cochran once mm-hmm. a month. Most of the pets, most of the time, our batting average is near 1,000, mm-hmm. which is better than most baseball players,
yes.
even on the Cubs. As well as they're doing, they don't hit 1,000. However, it's not perfect.
Mm-hmm.
Are you pretty much perfect?
You know, there are some animals that take much longer to get a home than others.
Mm-hmm.
And I will point out that senior pets, for example,
sure.
a classic example, as you know, they take longer to get placed. And it breaks my heart when I do the segments every weekend and we'll get a 10-year-old dog or a 12-year-old dog or even a 14 or 15-year-old cat. And I always ask Colette, she's the young lady that I do the segments with from mm-hmm. The Anti-Cruelty Society, what is the reason that the pet was given up? And then she'll say to me, and then in my own little way on the air, I will take a dig at the person. They may not be watching, but if they are, they know that you're being called out.
Yeah,
I realize that
appropriately.
Yeah, people's and situations change.
That's
I get that.
The thing. You know, it's a hard, but it's a difficult thing for me not to be judgmental. And I've spent a fair amount of time in shelters, and you see people bringing these animals. And sometimes you understand.
Right.
I get that. You know, lives change and people right. get very, very ill and mm-hmm. don't have resources. And
that's right. Economic situations
yeah,
change.
Yeah, I understand
know, and
that.
Animals are costly. I get it.
On the other hand, to cavalierly give up an animal who's been with you for 10 years,
yeah.
I just cannot comprehend.
Well, you know, my favorite is, oh, we're having a baby. Well, then my first response is, you better not have another. Because that means you'll be giving up the first.
Yeah. You're right. Or we're moving is
right.
a big one.
That's
as if
terrible.
There's no apartment in the city that allows animals.
And we
know?
Both know that there are plenty of buildings that you can rent from that do allow pets.
Yeah.
And they're out there. Pet-friendly buildings are out there. And it may take a little more work on your part. But if you truly love your animal or animals, then you go the extra mile to save them. You just do.
And you yourself have a few at home.
Just a few, yes.
He's not going to talk. But you've saved so many animals because, yeah, I'm not talking about the X number you have at home. I am talking about the animals that you've saved and have been committed to doing. You've, at times, I know, because I know this stuff, have pushed NBC when needed, not now, but historically,
yes.
to say, I need to do this because it's the right thing to do.
Well, you know, there was some, I don't know why it wasn't done before. I always scratched my head, and I've been on the air, as we mentioned earlier, for a long time, decades, and I always thought it strange that we didn't do more to provide and protect pets. And that we couldn't really do a segment on the air saying in the daily broadcast, by the way, you know, please be responsible owners if you have pets, especially during the harsh winter weather or the, you know,
you were one
dog
of the,
days of summer.
You were one of the first to talk about that.
Well,
don't leave the dog outside if it's 100 degrees and
yeah,
bring in the dog if it's 90 below zero. And we do get that
thing.
In Chicago, right?
Yes, that's
so,
right.
So, but you were one of the first to really, now it's common, you know, people appropriately do that. But Andy, you were one of the first to say this has got to be talked about.
And the station finally said, okay, we'll do it. And we made graphics, you know, we'll show them on the air. And now it became a part of the program on the show.
Yeah.
And do it all the time now. And you're right, other stations do it as well. And kudos to them because really it's a necessary thing.
Well,
say, well,
who
has to remind
a person? You helped to start all this.
Well, you'd think to yourself, who has to remind a person, oh, by the way, it's 20 below, bring your dog in. But you do.
Yeah.
Because some people just think that, you know, God will provide. You know, these are domesticated animals. And while there are feral cats and there are wild dogs, the majority of the population of pets in the metro area and across the country are domesticated animals. And they rely on us for food and shelter and for their health needs.
Mm-hmm.
And you cannot just turn your back on them and let Mother Nature provide because it's a harsh life.
So this year, Bark in the Park, you mentioned Anti-Cruelty Society, who you've been working with forever.
Mm-hmm.
And I know they're grateful to have you, and they're amazing, that organization. The oldest animal facility in Chicago, originally saving horses, because back then, not so many dogs and cats as there were horses.
Yeah.
Their history and their legacy in Chicago is ginormous. But like all shelters, they're always taking in dogs and cats
right.
and need your help. So their big event is called Bark in the Park.
Mm-hmm.
It is May 21st. This year, it's an area called The Green, which is right outside Soldier Field. So
changing locations this year.
It's at a different location. For further information, anticruelty.org is the website.
Mm-hmm.
Andy, if there were one message you could leave folks concerning companion animals
yes.
that you've learned, you have the platform, what would that be? Maybe even something you couldn't say on TV that you can say to me.
I think that one of the things I would share with the listeners of this program is that, you know, I know that many people have heard that the word God is dog spelled backward.
Sure.
I can't think of any other creature that brings more to my life than my dogs or my cats, or in this case, even my bird Pickles. They find a way into your life and they touch you. They love you unconditionally. My dogs, when I come home every single day, run to the door to see me. My wife and daughter barely lift their head. You know, even my cats, as aloof as they can be because they're feral, even though they're domesticated now, you know, my Simba has come around and is very affectionate now. And one of my favorite things to do is when he rolls over on his back and I rub his tummy and he purrs like mad. Just it sings to me. It makes me feel so good to know that that animal is comfortable enough to allow me to touch the animal, rub its belly, scratch its head. And it's a bond. It's a communication between the two of us. And when my bird sits on my shoulder and he kisses me on my cheek, and he does with his little beak, and he goes, and then he says, I love you so much, in that little voice of his.
He does.
He does.
What kind of bird is this?
He's a Quaker parrot.
Sure, they could do that.
Yeah, and his name is Pickles because he's all green.
Except he does not have that southern accent you
he
had.
He doesn't have a southern accent. But It's just magical. It just really is magical. And animals have touched my life for as long as I can remember. And we just recently lost our oldest, who was almost 20 years old.
Oh, I'm sorry.
And it was heartbreaking. And to lose her, it's hard. It hurts.
Sure.
You know, so I love my animals dearly, and they're a lot of work. Don't ever have somebody tell you, ah, oh, they're not that much work. They are. But when you make that commitment to an animal, you get so much more in return than you ever have to give.
But it must be worth it not only to you, but to most people in America. Most, in fact, there are more pets in this country than children.
Mm-hmm.
So no public official, to my knowledge, our mayor, Rahm Emanuel, has mm-hmm. not said you must have a pet. Our president, Barack Obama, has not said you must have a pet.
Mm-hmm.
Even Donald Trump has not said, he says a lot, but he has not said you must have a pet. It's a choice we make, and it's a choice statistically most Americans do make.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, we're not the only country that makes that same choice. So many millions of people, many, many millions around the world make mm-hmm. that choice. It's a volunteer choice. So they do cost us some money.
They do.
They are, as you mentioned, a responsibility, take some time. Yet what we get must override all of that, those benefits,
mm-hmm.
because we choose to time and again live with pets.
There are those who give so much more to their animals over and above what I do. I'm shocked the sacrifices they make. A couple of people come to mind real quickly. They have the horse rescue of Will County
sure.
down in Beecher.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, they take in all these animals. People abandon their horses, just abandon them.
Yeah, I understand it's a problem outside Chicago, but if you go out to the western part of the country mm-hmm. or down to the south, it's even a greater problem.
So they take these animals in and they care for them at great expense to themselves.
Yes.
I have another friend, her name is Lisa, and she has a Sheltie rescue in Lamont. And she has 25 or 26 Shelties that she has taken in and she cares for by herself.
Wow.
And so when I see the level of commitment that these people, for example, give, it just touches me. It just really does, that people care that much about animals.
Well, I know you are one of those who does, and you're a cherished Chicagoan at this point, Andy.
You were too kind. Noted pet expert Steve Dale.
So from noted pet expert Steve Dale to noted meteorologist and friend of all animals and friend of Chicago, Andy Avalos, thank you so much.
What a pleasure. Thank you for having me on, Steve.